Welcome to Enneagram Conversations with Renee Siegel. Maybe you know your Enneagram type, but what's next? Renee uses the Enneagram in conjunction with self-awareness practices to help people better understand the patterns of their type, including patterns of thinking, emotions, and behaviors. This show is highly interactive. Listen or call in to find out how to identify your type, and for those who do know their type, what can you do next to open yourself up to a greater capacity for personal transformation? We all have great strengths, sitting alongside areas that we need to strengthen. It starts with noticing your patterns. You'll begin to discern whether you need to step in and take action or just sit back and observe. Learn how to dance between observation and participation and watch yourself transform. Enneagram Conversations starts now.
Welcome, everybody, to Enneagram Conversations, and we have an incredible episode for you today because we have the most exciting type joining us today as we wind down with our tour of the types. We have our type 7, the enthusiast, the epicure, lots of other names, adventurer, and on and on and on and on and on it goes. And I have two amazing young men as my guests today. And I'm going to be a fly on the wall during most of this so that they can engage with each other. Because when you listen to the narrative of their type coming from them and not from me, you're going to learn a whole lot more than you would learning from me. I am Renee Siegel. I am so grateful to be your host today for my viewers and listeners. And without further ado, I want to introduce Matthew M. and Milton Stewart, who are here today to join me. They'll tell you a little bit about themselves, and we'll start with the first question. What made you interested in the Enneagram, and how did you land on your type?
Go ahead, Milton. I'm going to let you start it off.
I was just about to let you go. All right, so my story starts, I was at a devotional at our young adult minister's house. I'm kicking back, stuffing my face full of food as I usually do. And he came out, he's like, hey, who wants to like look at this personality test? And he's like, yeah, let's do it. You know, I've always been excited about, you know, things around personality and stuff like that. And at this time I'm like in college. So this is quite a little few years ago, double digits now. Hard to imagine that. But anyway, he's doing the two questions. He brought out the wisdom of the Enneagram, you know, the two question test. And so I get mine right on the first one, which is great, you know, to a certain extent. And so what he does, he goes to each one and he's like starts to read off like the first two or three paragraphs. Now, the first paragraph, I'm like, that's me all day. Yes. And then he started to read the second and third. It started getting to all the nasty gookie stuff that people don't see about me. And I was like, oh, no. And so I started trying to look halfway normal, but feeling real awkward and feeling like exposed. So I was looking extra, like, I guess, guilty or something. I was like, I'm good. That's interesting. I don't know about that. I'm looking to that. Like, I don't already know. Right. And so it interested me because it was like Big Brother was watching me. Like, I was like, when no one else saw me, I was like, how in the world do they notice about me? And so that intrigued me because it was something that actually pinned me, you know, something that like, that's you, like, ooh. So I got super excited and I bought like every book I could find at the time, which was not as many as we have now. There's explosion of books now, but not as many as we have now. But it was like, I bought every one that I could, start reading up. It was like two podcasts out then on it. And I listened there, but that's just how I grew from there learning it. So, Matt, what about you?
So my experience was a little bit different. My initial introduction to the Enneagram was through my therapist. I had been doing individual therapy for quite a while. And for me personally, it was exposed to me at an interesting point in my life as I was in the midst of a massive drug addiction. So the initial, I definitely didn't get the benefit from it that you seem to have immediately. Mine was not that case. I saw some of the negatives of it. And so what did I do? I went back and took the test multiple times until I got a different type. That's what I did. And after going back and forth multiple times, I was able to get a little bit more information, specifically once I got clean, once I was no longer under the influence, I started to really see the benefit of the Enneagram and it allowed me to kind of learn so much more about myself, which the whole process of being in recovery for myself is all about learning. Because for so long, I was living in a drug-induced state, and then having the Enneagram brought in as well, it was like, took my my eyes opening to like hugely open. It went from, you know, just like, oh, there's a world out there, to like, whoa, there's a world out there. And it's been so beautiful just being able to grow with that and learn more. And it's a constant growth process. I will say that the Enneagram is layers upon layers upon layers for myself, at least. And there's always something to work on. There's always something to grow within it. Definitely.
Yeah. I want to interject a thought here when we talk about recovery, because there are a lot of people in recovery who have used the Enneagram and hopefully will continue to benefit from the Enneagram. And one of the things that you brought out is such a pearl, because, you know, it's really hard sometimes to identify your type really early in recovery because you just look all messed up. Number one, I mean, drug-induced behaviors have a lot of similarity with all other types of drug-induced behaviors. You know, half-truths and lies by omission and commission. And we could go on and on and on and on what happens when you're in active addiction. But sometimes, I mean, the journey to having any awareness and insight is so clouded by the denial of the addiction. That's another really, really interesting point. But the tidbit, I think the real pearl, you know, as a therapist who's been using the Enneagram in recovery for 20 of the 42 years that I've been in practice, is the real pearl, and I hope every person out there that's in active addiction or is even considering moving into recovery hears this, is that it really helps you get that the patterns of your type both led you into addiction, and they're also going to lead you straight out of it. I mean, what the resilience of your type, it's like the perfect example of a double-sided coin, you know? So I just hope that somebody out there hears that, because it takes the focus off of being this bad, nasty, degenerate, you know, self-denigrating person to, oh my God, these patterns are good and these patterns are really challenging, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely.
I agree.
Definitely.
So what happens when somebody can't find their type? I mean, both you guys landed on your type. What do you say to the person who just is going around in circles and can't land on a type? What do you tell them?
Well, I mean, that I don't have a ton of experience, strength or hope to lend to that, because even when I was trying to deny what my type was, it was so blatantly plastered everywhere, you know, like I couldn't even make it through like three or four sentences of the negative before I was like, wow, okay, yeah, that's me. But I have noticed, you know, some people do struggle with that. And I think I know for myself, it came from the fact that I didn't really want to honestly look at myself. I still wanted to put on a facade of who I want you to think I am, or even who I want myself to think I am. Mm-hmm. So really having a true, honest assessment. And for me personally, realizing that it's not a negative or a positive one way or the other. What type I am or what type somebody else is, that's an asset. It's, you know, even if there are some things in there that might make elements of life a little more challenging, that doesn't mean that it's a negative. So I would just say, for me personally, I don't like telling anybody what to do, but take an honest, hard self-assessment look, if you will. What would you say, Milton?
Yeah. So when I think of it, I've been working on this. I have some experience with this. I have an internal visceral response when someone is mistyped, and they're like, oh, I'm this type. And you're looking around, you're like, no, you're not, you know, but at the same time, you're like, I don't want to tell you like that, but I want to ask, you know, cause I've asked teachers in courses. I was like, we had a group of sevens and somebody was over there. Yeah, we do this as sevens, don't we? And I looked over, I was like, no, we don't. And I had to go ask the teacher who was like teaching us. I was like, how do I like address this without being disrespectful or rude or hurting their feelings? Because I really want to say, like, this is not your type. 9.9 out of 10. No, like, I'm not perfect, but I'm pretty sure they don't fit in our group. And, you know, and just using a question, you're like, have you considered these types before? You know, so for me, I do typing interviews. there's type of interviews I usually do if someone like having a hard time finding their type. And I also I'm working to a place where I understand it is their journey. But at the same time, I think it's very important that you are working on the journey and the path that has your soul has connected to. Not to say that, you know, you won't weave through different things, but I think it's very important at the very same time. So I walk that balance and I've been working on that because I do have a, like, I have a body response when someone is mistyping, flaunting around. I'd be like, ooh, my body just be like,
Yeah. Yeah. I want to piggyback on that because I'm also not a body type. You're not a body type. And I have a visceral response when somebody's been mistyped. It's challenging and asking people, you know, have you considered this? Or one of the other things that's sometimes helpful to offer is just to say, you know, the journey to finding your type can be really rich because it's filled with self-awareness. And so sometimes there are lookalike types. And so before you land on that type, would you be open to just discerning whether or not that is the right one because of lookalike types? And I also love what you said about typing interviews because there's a ton of assessments out there. But for those of us like yourself and myself, Milton, who are certified accredited professionals, we have to learn how to type. You know, we have to learn how to assist people in typing without telling them what their type is. And there, that is a really delicate place to be if you really want somebody to stay on task, on their path, and stay really excited about this journey, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So we're going to go to break in just a minute. But before we do, any thoughts about why the Enneagram might be a different personality typing system than what you've been exposed to in the past?
All right. I would say, I mean, for me personally, it goes a lot deeper. It goes a lot deeper than a lot of things I have in the past. You know, I've done some other personality tests and I don't have a ton of experience with them, but this breaking everything down between a head type, a body type, and a heart type for me personally, really, I don't know, it characterized it in a much different way than I'd ever seen it personally.
Yeah.
Along those same lines, what Matthew is saying, it hits the why, the motivation behind what we do, because a lot of personality tests, they give us the type stuff. They give us the what, and that's great, but I need the why and the motivator so I can work on it.
Yeah.
I like that.
Yeah, great stuff. So stay tuned. We're going to come back and we're going to talk about assets of type, characteristics of type, opportunities for growth in type, and all sorts of other things that these two guys might have to share with you that are going on in their lives around the Enneagram and around other things. So we'll see you after break.
One day, I arrived early to meet a friend for lunch. One of the wait staff welcomed me with a beautiful smile. It was everyday magic. We experience this kind of thing all the time, but it was magical because the smile made me feel happy and content. The Sanskrit word for smile is smitam. It means fully blossomed, fully bloomed, and expanded, like an empty field suddenly full of spring flowers. In the same way, a bright smile given freely changes everything. It can warm the heart. It can reassure or inspire or uplift. It can bring joy or lift a burden. Try it for yourself. Smitam, a smile, and discover a little everyday magic. Join me, Sarah Main, on Damayanti, the show for your soul, where we discover everyday uplifting magic together. And check out my website, damayanti.store.
Did you know that when we talk about the Earth's ecosystems, the most important ecosystem has been left out? You. We created the ecosystem approach to recapture human potential.
Find us at theecosystemapproach.org.
Join us every Monday at 1 p.m. Pacific Time and 4 p.m. Eastern Time for the Ecosystem Approach Show with Jason and Patricia on TransformationTalkRadio.com.
How to lead a happier life on TransformationTalkRadio.com.
Not just talk, conversation for profound self-awareness.
Stick with us. Your best life awaits on TransformationTalkRadio.com.
Welcome back to Enneagram Conversations. I am Renee Siegel, and I am just jazzed to be your host this afternoon, evening, depending on what part of the world and time zone you have changed into in the last week or day. welcome back. We're going to dive more deeply into talking about this type 7 and specifically the attributes or the character structure. We talk about personality. And I just want to clarify something, that personality is not who we are, but it's a strategy that we use to manage our lives. And so many of us are really stuck on believing that these characteristics, these patterns that we demonstrate to both to ourselves and to others are really who we are. That's not who we are, but it is how we manage our life. And that becomes really pertinent when you start to think about the potential for change. Because when we have these practices that we can use to stand back and watch our type, watch our character structure, watch our personality patterns, then we have the opportunity to create something called a pause or a pivot and make a shift. So although you're hearing from them what these characteristics are, it is not them. It is their strategy. So without further ado...
I mean, I will say it. Sometimes I feel like it is kind of me. I am pretty enthusiastic. But again, I'm the baby in terms of Enneagram knowledge within this group here. I have really, you know, just started my journey compared to the two of you guys. So I think at times I find it almost difficult to separate, you know, who I am with that strategy. And I'm sure that as I put more work into it and more time to develop that knowledge, I will get more clarity. But I will admit fully at times, like, my strategy isn't being enthusiastic. My strategy isn't being a quick thinker, creative thinker, or problem. That's who I am. And that can cause difficulties at times when I don't. You know, when that enthusiasm isn't quite at, you know, at 10, like it usually is. And then I start thinking, what's wrong with me? What's wrong with me? I'm not enthusiastic today. I'm not being optimistic and positive about all the negatives. Like it turns into, because I haven't developed as in depth of an understanding, you know, to actually realize that that isn't who I am. I know sometimes it's my strategy and other times I'm like, nah, that's who I am. That's just who I am. So I'm curious to hear, Milton, what your statement on that is, to get some more knowledge. I'm going to take notes now.
This is so rich. Oh my goodness, I'm loving this. First of all, I love your energy. It's a seven. Second, I love your voice. This is the seventh thing. You know, like I love, because there's a certain energy resonance that comes from, you know, how even our bodies are wired to a certain degree. So I'm excited, buzz. One of the biggest things I've found as the strategy and understanding the space between who I am compared to the strategy. Oh my goodness, there's space there. I see it a lot of times as when I can use it as a gift, which is meaning that I'm using the highest qualities of the seven as a entity, or I can mess up and make an identity. Like Matthew was saying, where it comes with all these downsides that are really not fun to work with. But one of the biggest things I would say I see as in some of the space or distance between it is like the excitement, the buzz part. I realized over time that a lot of times the buzziness is for other people. It took me a while to catch that. I was like, oh my goodness, this is for other people. There's a part of me that is naturally excited, that is fun, that is joyful. But there is a big part of me that is like, it's the joy and the happiness is for other people. But the ego structure is so weird, because even though it's for other people, it's still for me at the same time in a weird, selfish way. It is so interesting. It's a weird microcosm of things happening there. I would say along those lines, something came up that you mentioned, and I got so excited, I'm not gonna lie, I like slick forgot. But so Renee, can you give me like another question? Because I wanted, sure. It was something Matthew said, and I.
Yeah. Well, one of the things I think that's really interesting, because having a very, very strong seven energy myself, but not being seven, not being my primary type. One of the things that I notice about landing on my own individual type, and I'm wondering if it's true, thinking that it probably is for all types, is that when we are sitting with the parts of ourselves that are really becoming and lovely and we want to put out there, and we find that we engage with the world in a really positive way, and we get lots of mirroring and positive feedback back in return, stuff like that, it's really easy. But when I actually have to flip that and offer some self-compassion to the parts of myself that are really not that way, that's a rough spot to be in. And I would imagine when you look at the pain behind like real full-bodied emotional energy in Seven Land, the pain that sits behind the enthusiasm or the disowned aspects of. So yeah, go for it.
Oh, I remember now. Thank you. You said something perfect. All right. One of the biggest things in ways you will know that you're growing, Matthew, is when people start to say to you, wow, you're not being yourself. Like, what's going on? But you feel fine. You actually feel good, but they're used to you being up here. This happened to me in an Enneagram, my first Enneagram certification. I did an exercise with Dr. Ginger Lapik-Bagda, and she had got me into my body, and she had got me present. Like, we did an activity. Messed up, like I was holding my stomach and I felt all like consoled and together and stuff like this. And I'm looking awkward in front of these people I barely know, but I'm feeling so good. Like I'm feeling together. And people are like, are you okay? Are you all right? And she described it as champagne. And a lot of times we're bubbling too much, you know, and I know this is ridiculous, but we're bubbling too much. Right. And it's like, you know, if you shake it, it's bubbling too much. And if it's too low, not enough bubbles, it's not going to be good either. But it's like just right being there. So as a seven, how can we just work on just being right there? So I say a big part of the growth is when people say, what's wrong with you? Are you okay? Because you're not all up here. And then all of a sudden, you're actually feeling great, though. You're like, no, I'm fine. You know, I'm good. You know, that's a big part of growth. Something you mentioned, Renee, there is a lot of pain. There is a lot of hurt. And I think that's one of the biggest things and one of the hardest things. And people may not fully understand us as sevens, the suffering we do have when we actually do our work. It's a whole lot. And it's not only just suffering and pain and necessarily sadness, but there's sadness, there's fear. And for me, there's also anger. Like I'm actually kind of okay with anger to a certain degree, being a black male and stuff like that. And in the male society, in our society, America, whatever. But those three feelings, actually, I prefer not to feel them because they cause, there's like this after effect that they leave something in the body that doesn't feel good. And it's annoying to have to deal or sit with or go through. So I would say sitting with what's behind that is, oh, it's gut wrenching and it's somatically disturbing. It's in the body disturbing, not just in my head. My body's disturbing. That's why it's so hard for us sevens to go there. So I don't know, Matt, do you want to add to that?
I love that you brought up the element of pain, you know, because that's something that I've done tremendous amount of work on. And being able to even not walk through the pain with dignity and grace, but to even acknowledge the pain. Because for so long, even within recovery, I was finding ways and means to not have to go through the pain. Before I got in recovery, there were very specific ways that I didn't deal with the pain, whether physical, mental, emotional, or spiritual. But once I got into recovery, pain it made me feel icky. To put the very good scientific term on it, it made me feel icky. And as you eloquently stated, it left something behind. And I didn't want to deal with that. So I was very, very resistant to embracing that. And one of the things that our type is known for is always putting the optimistic spin on things. And I would do that to a T. I could take the worst situation ever and find that one teeny tiny little sliver of silver lining and hold on to that like it was a life raft in the middle of the Atlantic. And that's just what I would do. But by doing more work and actually sitting. One of the things that my therapist told me, because I was always ready to just reshift. Oh, something bad happened. Let's find the positive. One of the things she said is, no, you're going to sit in it. Woo. Okay. And she was, you're going to sit in it for 5 minutes. And like 30 seconds in, I was like, okay, we're good. And then the next time we got to about a minute. And then finally we worked to it, to actually being where I'm able to not only acknowledge the pain, not only sit with the pain, but find ways and means to walk through the pain. But more importantly than just walking through it, with dignity and grace, because I can walk through pain angrily. I can walk through pain explosively. I can walk through pain unhealthily, but to be able to walk through it with dignity and grace, that is when we grow. When we can do that, because we're so resistant to pain, that when we can walk through it, it's like, it's like goosebumps. I literally just got goosebumps, because it's such a full, not just like a body experience, it's like it's mind, body, heart, everything type of experience, because it's something that me personally, I'm so not used to doing.
Woo! So. Got something to add?
I don't know if I have anything to add right now, but I was just moved by his words, because that's the thing, to be able to do that. And the word that came up for me, which is, our virtue, which is sobriety. I think it lands perfect in this conversation with both of us and with your, going through addiction. Like, I think this is a perfect segue into that, if we want to jump into that just a tad bit. But it is interesting, because sobriety, we have to be able to do exactly what Matthew was talking about. Can I walk in my pain with dignity and class and health and still be able to manage through it and sit with? So that's the only way, because we have to constantly manage that with our growth. You can't just be like, no, I'm good now, we'll deal with pain way later. No, don't work like that, unfortunately.
Yeah. We are definitely going to deal with the whole recovery piece, because I think there's a lot to unpack in that. We'll do that in our next segment. But I want to end this one with just some other words that we've talked about: avoiding pain, reframing things, lots of energy, being enthusiastic, positivity. What other characteristics would you name in your 7 character structure?
Creative, synthesizing information. And I mean unrelated information mentally, which can create a hard time to explain it to other people sometimes, but it's amazing the way our brains work. And I would say visionary, like
outside the box.
Oh my
problem
goodness.
Solving.
Yes.
I think there's actually one Enneagram assessment type that actually calls a 7 a visionary. Yeah, and I'm not surprised by that. Yeah. Great stuff, guys. When we do come back, we are going to talk about recovery, because I think recovery, whether or not we're using the 12 steps for an addiction specifically, or just recovery in terms of looking at recovery and being addicted to the patterns of our type, there's a lot to unpack. I am Brené Siegel. I am your host of Enneagram Conversations. And if you want to know more about me or my work or my upcoming book with my co-author, Sharon K. Ball, please check it out at www.urpurepotential.com. That's the letter U, the letter R, purepotential.com. We'll be right back.
Hi, I'm Patricia McNair, host of Divine Guidance with Patricia, and I'm here to help you live a more authentic, spiritually connected life. Join me every first and third Wednesday at 9 a.m. Pacific on TransformationTalkRadio.com. Being who you are in everyday life is the key to unlocking soul wisdom within that our whole self already knows. Get ready to embrace your spiritual, mental, and emotional well-being, your whole being. Discover your gifts and strengthen your connection to spirit. We will explore earth guidance, divine truth and love, past life lessons, and so much more. So listen in The Divine Guidance with Patricia and joining your personal adventure to triggering, opening, validating, and being all that you are. For more information about me, visit divineguidance.earth.
Start shifting possibilities into probabilities with Colette Marie Steffen through her energetic upgrade online programs and personal consultations. Colette is a leading expert in the field of quantum energetic transformation. Are you ready to get your shift together? Book a 45-minute energetic upgrade session with Colette and check out all the energetic upgrade programs at thetruthisfunny.com.
Join the new earth on the Cornelia Stephanie Show. Tune in each month as Cornelia takes listeners on an odyssey of higher consciousness to inspire, educate, and empower. Cornelia Stephanie is a spiritual teacher, passionate speaker, published author, and founder of the Empower Network. Cornelia guides people on the path of self-healing, peace, and liberation. For more information, go to CorneliaStephanie.com.
You've been listening, but are you watching? Tune in to your favorite shows on the Transformation Talk Radio Facebook page. We stream live video podcasts every day.
Welcome back to Enneagram Conversations, and we are going to dive into the topic of recovery. We're going to talk a bit about recovery as recovery from both substance addictions, recovery from behavioral addictions such as gambling and sex addiction, and we're going to talk about recovery in terms of just being addicted to the patterns of our type. We talked briefly about the fact that we are not our personality, but we walk around like we are our personality. So we truly are addicted to the patterns of our type because they are the strategies that we have employed to manage our life. That's a rough thing to shift. Yeah. So where do we start?
I mean, I'll just kind of hop in here real quick because one thing I think what I love when you mention, you know, the strategies to managing life. For an addict like myself, prior to getting into recovery, my entire life revolved around finding ways and means to get more of a substance so that I wouldn't feel pain. So I was implementing, unbeknownst to me in ways, I was implementing parts of my type of that element of not wanting to feel pain, not wanting to have to walk through that, wanting to have options and wanting to just live in the moment. I was using that almost as a negative to be the strategy to continue my life in active addiction. And, you know, that I'm not saying that, like, because I was a type 7, I'm an addict. I'm not saying that because I'm a type 7, I used for as long as I did, or I did the things I did, you know, in active addiction. But when I look at the strategy that I was employing within my life as an addict in active addiction, there are definitely some ties. I can definitely see that.
Mm-hmm. Substance addictions, behavioral addictions, both?
Yes. Definitely within my substance, you know, substance use. But the beautiful thing about recovery that I personally love, and I say all the time, is that the recovery from the disease of addiction isn't simply about taking the drugs away. Because as a recovering addict, I took the drugs away and then I realized how much more work was there. And I looked at the other things within my life that I was using to supplement. Whether it was sex, whether it was ego fluff, whether it was finding ways to escape my reality, finding ways to escape my pain. Those are all unhealthy characteristics within myself that I, you know, didn't need to put a substance in my body in order to feel that. So having my type of a 7 of not wanting to walk through pain when I've got a year and a half clean off of all substances, and now I'm using people or sex or ego aggrandizement, if you will, or video games or money or things or whatever it is to not walk through that pain, that's a problem. And that's not living a healthy recovery existence, in my opinion.
Mm. That was extremely rich. So the first thing that came up for me listening to you speak, Matthew, is one of the things that is so, I would say, counter to our type structures way of living life. Just a paradigm that for us in reality, our dualistic way of wanting freedom is a trap. Mm-hmm. It's actually a trap for us. There's this yearning for to be free so we can do whatever we want and not be attached to things so we can do this and do that. And it's really a trap. And it's crazy because there's an initial feeling of like, ooh, this feels good. But then we realize once we've gone through the experience or the experience again and again, like, this is a trap. Like I'm not getting like the so-called reward or what I get from it. It is not getting better. It's getting worse. Diminishing returns every time, right? And then I don't feel good about myself. And it's like, it's so interesting how it is trapping instead of freeing, which is one of the most like counter things to what the seven ego kind of wants us to like kind of give into life. And so my patterns have been, and I've haven't been watching this, is that the addictions to things of escaping pain come when something really bad has happened for me. So for me, I'll be really good like 3-4 months, something bad to happen. Then all of a sudden now I'm into an addiction. So now I'm running around doing addictive behaviors and I'm doing them compulsively. Like, it's not like I'm good. Then I go, no. It's like compulsively addictive. And working, it's so interesting working like your way out of being addicted to something or like compulsively wanting something. It is so interesting because things shift in your head, heart, and body. Like literally everything is like twisted. It's like you're definitely living in like a twisted reality where everything is kind of just contorted and screwed up. But you think I'm thinking kind of straight, right? But I know it's not all the way right, but something here, but I'm still addicted to whatever this is. So it is this really strange paradigm that we constantly have to work on and work through, especially when something bad happens, because all it takes is just a little bit of whatever we get addicted to or compulsively really want to do. And then all of a sudden we're in it. And then it's like, mm-hmm. I'm here now. I know, yeah, that's how
here,
it is. Like,
I'm here now. I might as well just be here.
Whatever. I'm here now. Right. So I'm
very true.
And that's a scary place.
Yeah. They say if one is good, two is better for all addictions. And we really put a lot of that energy as we talk about the type eight, but I don't think that the seven really gets the examination of that is really as strong in the type seven as it is in the eight. That lustful energy is more like the intensity of anything that helps one to kind of stay away from pain, and it can take you off and running.
And I love that you said lustful energy, because that's so true. You know, that is a perfect way to explain that feeling of not being in pain, of not walking through pain. And I don't mean using a substance. I mean, whatever it is, having money, buying stuff, having sexual relations, whatever it is, that it really is like a feeling of lustful energy to escape, to just get out of that pain. Don't look at it. I will justify and rationalize my way so I don't have to walk through this pain, and the most addictive of ways. So that was a great term. I like that.
Yeah. And the freedom that you were talking about when you're wanting this, just the strong, just yearning for freedom and pushing for it in every way possible in seven land. And then finding that the freedom that you're seeking, especially through a recovery program, is actually available to you within the structure of the program. Can you talk about that? Because that's, I think, a conundrum, right?
Go ahead. You could start off on that one for sure.
Well, you know, just the resistance to going to 12, to be part of a 12-step program, the resistance to the structure, the resistance to doing the step work, the resistance to that because you're actually being told what to do.
I see what you're saying.
Think your freedom's being taken away from you. And well, that... It speaks
to the whole statement of, you know, that what you'll hear constantly in 12-step recovery meetings is that, you know, freedom is through surrender. And that is, again, so antithetical to where if I'm giving up, you're telling me I'm going to be free. Like, how does that work? But it genuinely is truthful that the way to surrender is the way for freedom is through surrender. So I think that in itself is one of the most difficult things because surrender sounds like you're like the opposite of freedom. No, that means I'm being locked up. I'm in a cage. That's the opposite of what I want as a seven. So that's a very truthful thing. Like the freedom is within surrender and really looking within ourselves and within a program or a therapist or whatever it is that we can use, whatever tools we have, you know?
Mm-hmm. You think that's also part of what happens with even doing step work too?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, just that element of being told what to do and then having to take the pain. Because I can tell you, as somebody who's worked through my 12 steps, there is a lot of pain that comes out within that. Working a step six and talking about my character defects, what's wrong with me? Oh, that's painful. That was incredibly painful. But like we talked about prior, the way that we grow, period, as human beings, I believe, is by walking through pain. But especially for a seven, I feel like that seven, we have like an extra level up. We hit a power up when we can walk through pain. Like regular people can grow through pain, but when we walk through pain, it's like we're in Mario and we like got a mushroom and we whoop, 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 and now we're up to the next level of walking through pain and getting that growth personally.
Yeah.
No, I definitely agree. I think every type has their specific key way that they grow. And it's like, as a seven, our key way is through pain. Like, really? I couldn't get relaxation like a one, like learn how to relax and take care of yourself and like, you know, enjoy life, serenity. No, I got pain. Okay, thanks. Thanks a lot.
Yep. Oh, that's funny. Because as a type two, I have to take better care of myself. But I got to tell you, I got to also look at my cruelty and my meanness and all that other stuff that is really not very becoming. Any last words before we finish our segment on recovery? Or we can pick this up again, but I want you each to have an opportunity to talk about some other things as we end the show. Any final words about recovery?
I mean, recovery is possible. We do recover.
I love that. I don't know if there's anything better to say than that. Than recovery is for everyone.
That part.
Everyone.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'll just take us out with the fact that when I first was introduced to the Enneagram and somebody said, we're all addicted to our patterns, it really opened my eyes to something bigger than the substance and the process addictions that I'd been working on and working with people and families with for years. It was like, wow, we really are all addicted to our patterns. So, yeah. Well, on our last segment, we're going to come back and talk about what you guys are up to, what the assets are of your type, what some of the challenges are of your type, and what you would like people to know to better get along with you about your type. That should be an interesting one. Welcome us, and we will welcome you back after this quick break. I'm Renee Siegel, and thank you for joining Enneagram Conversations.
The vibration of change, that magical place where life shifts from struggle to ease, from stagnation to forward movement, from old ways of being to new ways of becoming. If you're like I am, it can be rather elusive to get there, but when you are in it, you feel it down to your very core, don't you? And it can positively affect everything in your life, from your relationships to your health and well-being, from your career path to your abundance, from the quality of that inner connection to the fullness of your self-expression. On the Christine Upchurch Show, we explore ways to get into that vibration of change with experts in the fields of consciousness, psychology, spirituality, health, healing, and science. Join me, Christine Upchurch, every Friday at 11 a.m. Pacific Time, 2 p.m. Eastern Time on KKNW AM 1150 and Transformation Talk Radio, and learn new ways to step into your vibration of change.
Take us with you on your morning commute. Download your favorite shows and listen anytime. Just visit TransformationTalkRadio.com.
It's time to shake out your money-making truth on Soul Wisdom Abundance with Jennifer Bloom, creating wealth from spiritual health on TransformationTalkRadio.com. This hit show is more than your roadmap to success. It's your compass to abundance through joy and ease. Jennifer Bloom teaches you about the soul's relationship to money and wealth and how improving that relationship serves both you and the world. Learn more at JenniferBloom.com.
TransformationTalkRadio.com. Let the journey begin.
Welcome back to our final segment of Enneagram Conversations. I love you guys' smiles, man. Smiles are the best. Appreciate it. So we're gonna finish up today by trying to tackle a bunch of different things. And during our brief break, we were talking about, wow, what is it that people might learn about you from you to better understand you? So let's start there. What would you like people to know about your type?
I would like them to know that we're a whole human. And I mean that we feel things on a deep level as well. And we have serious bones in us as well. I think one of the things that happens is because they see the energy, they see the buzz. A lot of times sevens, we don't get taken seriously. And that is not a fun place to be at all. So just to know that we have very serious bones inside of us, and things that we really consider. And we may not always communicate those because some of it may be in the heart space and we have to work through some things, but we usually have pretty big hearts, and seriousness around the things and the people that we really care about.
Wonderful.
I like that. And I would say one thing for me, even recently that I've worked through is the element, you know, we've talked about pain a lot within this and how adverse us sevens are to pain. And I think one thing I would love others to realize is that if I'm sharing my pain, it's a lot more difficult than a lot of other people would be to share their pain. And I'm not telling people, well, you know, validate it, but in the same sense, it's a lot for me to do that. It's not a lot for me to be enthusiastic and logical or think of creative ways. That's easy. That is waking up first thing in the morning easy. But to actually sit with a feeling and share that feeling with another human being, that takes a lot of effort and a lot of energy and a lot of emotional, if you will. And I would like to just say that if that does occur, it would be, you know, it's beneficial to have it acknowledged or at least, you know, worked through with that person. Cause I've seen in the past where there've been times where I've shared pain and somebody's response was not what I was looking for. And I immediately like retracted out of the pain rather than walking through it. It was like, oh, well then, well, we're good. Let's go. You know, like I immediately reverted back to my normal state. So I think that's something that for me personally as a seven definitely has popped up in the past.
Yeah. Is there any particular statement that you would love to hear from another human being when something like that is happening to you?
I mean, there isn't even any one specific statement as much as it's just acknowledgement and being present within the situation, being present within the situation and being willing to approach the situation, being willing to sit in that pain with me in a way. You know, I'm not good with pain, so I need a little assistance here. I need somebody to help me a little bit, you know. And for me, there isn't any one phrase. It's just like the acknowledgement of it and just the ability to I don't want to say validate, because that makes it sound like I need like this ego validation, and I don't like that word, but acknowledgement. Acknowledgement. There you go.
Acknowledgement and just noticing it. Like you said, I agree. It's just like being there, because for us to be in it, and it may not last, depending on the seven, you may know, it may not last forever. You know, like I say, it may be like, we may be down, all of a sudden we back up, you know, but that time we were down, that was a time we had to process and sit in what our pain really was. And so the acknowledgement of like, we were able to get there and just to be there with us means a world to us, world.
And I think that's a really interesting point that you mentioned, because I almost feel at times that when I am going through a situation or going through pain, we do as sevens have an ability to, myself personally, have a way to rebound pretty quickly. I can be going through the type of something that would be a pretty massive amount of pain, but then the next time you see me, I'm good. And I think that in a lot of ways, almost like our feeling of pain is undervalued, because people see us as, you know, quickly rebounding from it. Or maybe I feel like a lot of times we aren't really, our pain isn't really understood or valued because of how we are, just how our strategy is for life, if you will.
Right. I agree. I think one of the things too is that I encourage people not to push. I even teach this when I teach, like when we talk about the delicate parts of any type, but as a seven, when it gets to that emotional stage, you know, some people want even more. Don't do that, especially with a seven, because like we'll retreat, you know. I think and hold the space, I think encourage, I think are the right things to do. But two things, we don't necessarily need someone to cheer us up. We're good on that one. And we don't even need anybody to push us, try to pull us deeper into what we don't need that either necessarily. Like I'll go to a therapist if I need that. I don't need just a, you know, person doing it. So I think those things are important to remember with sevens for sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm hearing a lot about just being groundedly present, yeah. You know, and not trying to shift anything, maybe not even trying to use language, but just be groundedly present and allowing that. You had shared earlier, Milton, about the fact that, you know, one of the ways you know you've grown is when people go, wow, you're really different than you are. And so actually stepping in that into that pain is one of those kind of situations where people are going to go, oh, wow, you're really different. So it's so when people feel maybe off kilter because they see something that's not typical to what they're seeing, to just be with that and allow it, you know? Yeah. Both of you amazing gentlemen have things that are going on in your lives. So I want to split the last few minutes of our time to allow you to share with our viewers and listeners how they can find out more about you, what you're up to.
My name's, go ahead, Milton. You take it.
Go. All right. Well, my website is kaizencareers.com. You can go there. I do coaching consulting for nonprofits up to corporate corporations and one-on-one coaching as well. I have a podcast, Do It for the Gram, an Enneagram podcast. Check it out. People say it's pretty dope, so I appreciate that. And then I also do a 12-week Enneagram program throughout the year two times. It's called the Kaizen Complete Enneagram Certification Program. You can check that out also at kaizencareers.com. And you can also find me at IG. On at Kaizen Careers or Do It for the Gram podcast.
Yeah, and that name, Do It For The Gram podcast, that is like, that's such a great name. The best place to find me, I'm constantly all over social media. Again, I'm the host of the Clean and Filthy podcast. We're a 12-step recovery-based podcast. We do live episodes live on YouTube every single Tuesday at 5 p.m. Arizona time. You're going to have to figure out what time that is for you, because we don't change here, daylight savings, with episodes available for download on all podcast directories. Easiest place to go is cleanandfiltypodcast.buzzsprout.com. That has all 36 of our episodes, and get some more information from there. You can always reach me directly, Matthew@cleanandfiltypodcast.com. And if you have any questions about 12-step recovery, we cover a lot every week on the podcast. So hope to see everybody there.
Yeah. I want to give you both also an opportunity to just acknowledge each other. I mean, I want to acknowledge each of you because it's been amazing.
Yeah, that was fun.
A lot of fun. I feel really privileged to be part of this, but I imagine you both do with each other as well. So
yeah, that was great. That was an amazing, you know, I love being able to learn from somebody, and I've been able to learn a lot just over this last hour. So I really appreciate that.
Thank you, Matt. And like the work that you're doing and this, the way you were speaking, it shows a testament to the work you're doing. So I'm excited to, you know, keep knowing you more after this podcast.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Thank you guys for joining Enneagram Conversations. Thanks to our viewers and listeners. If you want to know any more about my work, I am Renee Siegel, and you can find me at Renee@urpurepotential.com, or my website is urpurepotential.com. That's the letter U, the letter R, purepotential.com. And early next year, we'll have a book, Sharon K. Ball and I, on, it's called Reclaiming You, on the Enneagram, Trauma, and Resilience. And I thank you all for joining today.
Thanks for listening to Enneagram Conversations. Renee is on a mission to guide people towards cultivating inner observation, which assists with self-awareness and expansion. Identify your type, notice your patterns, and learn how to unlock the higher aspects of your Enneagram type. There is limitless potential inside you already, just waiting to be unveiled. Join Renee next time on this journey of self-discovery and create more purpose and power in your life. For more information about Renee and her work, visit urpurepotential.com. That's the letter U, the letter R, purepotential.com. Until next time, remember, you are pure potential.
Views expressed on this program are those of the host, guests, and callers, and do not necessarily reflect the views of the station, its management, or advertisers. You're listening to Transformation Talk Radio.